Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And we're back. Here we are. By the time this comes out, 2 days from Dragon Con, can you feel the excitement?
It's not like we're counting down the days, hours, and minutes.
I may have installed that app earlier today.
Is the app updated?
In pre-Dragon Con form, what are we smoking this week, Brad?
So this week we have got the La Gran Llave, which basically translates to the big key.
Yes, it unlocks. It's the key to Flavortown.
Yeah. So this is actually, created by Michael Argentini and produced by AJ Fernandez's factory in Nicaragua. This is going to sport a Mexican San Andreas wrapper with a long cut Nicaraguan and Ecuadorian Habano binder and fillers. So.
Yeah, not only is it a San Andreas, but an Oscuro San Andreas, so it's like extra dark and oily, the best kind.
Yeah, so, I'm going to cut off the bat here, and, you know, as of right now, it's leaning more, you know, medium, maybe medium full on the body there, just a great, you know, combination of flavors here, I think that's one of the things when you're talking about the, you know, Oscuro San Andreas wrapper combined with, you know, the Nicaraguan and, you know, the spiciness of the Habano, that you're going to get a, you know, just all around complex, but, you know, very wonderfully, you know, blended cigar.
Yeah, and the filler is a blend of Ometepe, Condega, and Esteli tobaccos with a Jalapa Ecuadorian Habano. Yeah, supposed to be like a full strength, full body cigar, which is nice because I like the New Worlds, but I call them a medium, medium plus, you know. But, you know, AJ blending something that's a freaking, you know, powerhouse smoke, not only strong, but a lot of like full body, full flavor.
And maybe that's the thing is, you know, to me, this doesn't, you know, feel like a powerhouse off the bat, you know. I mean, this. You know, I mean, it's definitely got, you know, the notes and everything there, but it's not like one of those that's, you know, I feel like it's already kicked my ass.
It's so well blended that the strength is kind of offset by the flavors. I mean, you're people a lot of, I mean, espresso, chocolate,
I mean,
pepper,
you know,
cocoa.
People talk about, you know, oh, I want, you know, scotch or whiskey or, you know, a bourbon or something to, you know, pair with a cigar. You know, this is that cigar.
Yeah.
You know, you get something, you know, with, you know, me personally, I'm going, you know, probably a, you know, Woodford, you know, double oak or something of that nature. You know, I mean.
Yeah, because when you're pairing cigars, if you, you know, have a cigar that is too mild, you know, the strength of the whiskey will overpower it and vice versa. So this one definitely could strand up to a strong, like, full-flavored whiskey and probably pair nicely. We should probably go get some whiskey.
Quick, to the freezer.
And when you're, you know, drinking and smoking and you need a little extra energy to get you through the night, call in the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Never forget to use the promo code CIGARNERDS for 20% off your order. And if you're like us, I got the 40-pack to get me through Dragon Con. Because, you know, like I said, very little sleep. You know, you can't carry around 15 monsters with you. They just take up too much room. But, you know, the nice little can you can mix with any little, you know, tin pouch you can mix with anything. Perfect con energy drink supplement there.
And it's great, too, because, I mean, oftentimes you just mix with water or whatever, and, you know, it makes for some wonderfully delicious, you know,
pep. Put in some cocktails. Or if you, you know.
And you don't have to worry about
man
that
up.
Caffeine,
just suck,
you know.
The pack straight down. Don't even dilute it. Just go straight strike for us.
I mean, I think the thing for me is you don't worry about the, you know, caffeine crash or, you know, anything of that nature. Because that's what a lot of energy drinks do for me. They actually zap anything because after that initial rush, I'm done. But, yeah. You know, you don't have that crash or anything else with Strike Force.
No sugar, no calories. Get your Strike Force on. So, to kind of give you an early nerd news, the sequel to Super Troopers just got announced. And since, you know, that was probably one of our favorite movies from back in the day, we're going to talk about the movies of Broken Lizard, the geniuses behind such films as Super Troopers and Beer Fest.
Five guys that are just like, hey, let's do this. And after many years of school and everything else, they finally come together to do the thing.
Exactly. So with that, we'll be right back. And welcome back to the podcast. It's time to start this rat meow.
Rat meow meow?
Rat meow. So we're talking about a couple guys, you know, known as collectively as Broken Lizard. A comedy troupe that got together in college and then went on to actually, instead of like most of us, talk about doing shit, actually did some shit and made several movies.
Well, I mean, technically they talked about it, but I mean, it did take quite a while for it to all, you know, come into fruition. I think it was, you know, one of the guy fell out of college and ended up having to move in and basically crash on a couch and was like, all right, well, now you're done with school. We can actually do the damn thing.
Yeah, because they were a, you know, they got together in college and they became like a sketch comedy troupe that was, you know, traveling around doing like shows and stuff. And then kind of slowly got into away from the live performing and was like, we can have so much more fun making weird, fucked up movies. And one of their first like big full-length feature films, a little movie called Super Troopers, which, you know, directed by Jay Chandrasekhar, Oscar, who plays Thorny Ramathorn, and the rest of Broken Lizard, Kevin Heffernan as Rod Farva, Steve Lemmy as Mac, Paul Stoder as Foster, Eric Solansky as Rabbit. Yeah, as a group of horrible steam troopers.
I mean, are they that horrible, though? I mean, yeah, they got some shenanigans. They're probably not really good for productivity. But if you're going to get pulled over by a cop, that's the kind of cop you probably want to get pulled over by.
Oh, that was the thing. It's like, you know, it was...
I know this movie used to be near and dear to your heart.
Oh, exactly, because it was one of those that, like, I mean, it was only made for, you know, $1.2 million, made $23 million, which was, you know, that's a pretty good return on investment, but it, you know, didn't get a whole lot of good reviews back in the, you know, when it first came out, but it was one of those that just kind of developed a cult following, especially, like, anyone in law enforcement, because it was all the shit we wish we could get away with doing. People think cops have no sense of humor. We got, yeah, yeah. Like I said, I would have done all this stuff if it wouldn't mean getting fired or or arrested myself. But I mean, it's just one of those things, like, you wish you could fuck with people like they fuck with people.
Oh, I mean, you know, some of the more subtle things I think you can. I mean, you know, maybe not officially by the book, but, you know, I don't know. It's always good to put a little fear in people's hearts, I guess. Right, chicken fucker?
Yes, movie about, you know, some Vermont state troopers who, you know, and like I said, it's the weird, like, you know, jurisdictional rivalry between them and the local cops. I mean, that's you know, a thing you see. You know, if one of us is getting our ass kicked, we're all together, but the rest of the time we're like, yeah, fuck those county guys. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I mean, I feel like there's a, you know, a great divide there that, you know, all right, by the book, everybody in the department takes the fall, but...
Yeah, the feds shit on the state guys shit on the county guys shit on the local guys, and you know, vice versa.
The local guys just shit on everybody they have to deal with in their immediate area.
Pretty much. But yeah, it was kind of just, you know, you're never used to seeing, like, a police movie like this. You know, even if it's like something that's a comedy, it's a very like traditional, silly like police comedy. This one was like, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, and so, you know, let's give some examples. I mean, I kind of think, you know, what are you got Bad Boys, I would dare say, you know, sort of Smokey and the Bandit, you know, the.
But yeah, I mean, it's always been like, if it's a even considered, it's more of an action comedy. You know, police movies tend to be action first, comedy, you know, second, unless it's like just a straight up, you know, silly comedy like, say, Inspector Gadget or Pink Panther or something like that, where it's, you know, and this was kind of like a weird, like, you know, more of a comedy action instead of an action comedy, because there was some, you know, action sequences, but most time it's just them screwing with people's heads, yeah. Evil shenanigans.
Which, I mean, you know, some of the shenanigans are just absolutely great. I mean, I would like to think if I was a cop, you know, I could see myself being like, hey, time to put on a wig and, you know, let's go fuck with the boys and, you know, fly by at, you know, 90 miles per hour, make them think they're in some high-speed pursuit. Just, you know, I'll show up at the bar and make the rookie buy me shots.
Oh, yeah, just that opening sequence of the kids in the car, you know, doing drugs and they get pulled over. And the one guy in the back having to eat all the drugs and just tripping balls. And the way they just completely, like, screwed with him was freaking hilarious. You know, they roll up on him, you know, pull him over, and then, like, you know how fast you were going? 63? Yeah. He's like, isn't the speed limit 65? It is. License and registration. And as soon as they disappear and, like, take, where'd they go? And then they come back, pull over, like, we're already pulled over, man. We can't pull over any farther.
He's already pulled over. He can't pull over anymore.
And just walk up and start doing the same thing. And, like, I'm freaking out. You are freaking out, man. And that, my favorite, like, stop. You know why I stopped you? And I think I've even used this line. You know why I stopped you? Littering. Littering and littering. He's, like, holding the bag of weed. Literally didn't smoke in the reefer.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what made this movie great. I mean, you know, there were some subtle throwbacks. You know, I'm in my head, I'm like, yep, that's definitely a playoff of Reaper Madness right there. Like, you know.
I swear this is the reason why, like, anytime I see those, like, Just Busted or whatever they release, you know, the charges, anyone who's tried to toss their drugs out the window and eventually gets arrested, it's like, you know, there's like possession, blah, blah, blah. And littering. This has got to be the cause of that. Because, like, everyone's like, I'm going to write the littering ticket, too.
If it don't grow naturally on the side of the road, don't throw it there, man.
I wonder how many of those, like, you know, weekend community service guys are cleaning up the side of the roads, find bags of weed on a daily basis.
I don't know, but that could be a very lucrative thing.
Oh, and like, and of course, you know, you can't forget the legendary Brian Cox as John O'Hannigan, their captain of the post, who, you know, just has had enough of this shit.
I just want to make it to retirement. Like, you could tell that's like, I just want to hang up my hat on a good note and be done with this shit.
And I'm stuck with all these idiots in the middle of nowhere.
Come back, radio. Don't call me radio.
And then the, you know, when Mac flies by them in the car and sets off the chase, and then they're like, you still got those two stoners in the back of your car? And he just comes out, jumps in the car. I hope you boys like Mexico. Yes.
You know, I mean, and just to add, you know, the couple of shots fired on his way out of the bar. So it's like, fuck, this dude's done, you know, capped two cops. Now, you know, here we are. Still the one dude just tripping balls.
Licking the windows, yeah. You know? Straight up glass liquor. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries. Yeah, but this is one of those movies that, like, when it came out, it was just kind of in you know, a time of, you know, it came out in 2001, but I think that was, like, the early stages of reboots and remakes and everything else. This was, like, an original idea. You don't see many of those anymore, so I think that's why they've, you know, everything they've done is kind of, you know, at least, if not a commercial success, has definitely developed like a cult, you know, hardcore fan following because it's actually original ideas.
Yeah, I was looking here. Yeah, I mean, the only other thing, you know, I mean, I think you had some spinoffs, like, you know, I always kind of thought Super Troopers is what Reno 911 wanted to be. Like, yeah. You know, I
don't know what came out first, but
no, it was Super Troopers. So yeah, like, Reno 911, I think, came out on, I think it was July of 2003.
Yeah, I would say they definitely, you know, got inspired by this because, yeah, that's pretty much, like said, what, you know, that became. I mean, you could have called, you know, Reno 911 Super Troopers the TV series.
No, that would have been a disappointment, in my opinion. Yeah. It didn't have the same feel or the dynamics. I mean, you know, the thing is, we talk a lot about the, you know, the comedy aspect of it, which so much of it is, but I mean, you know, you do have the, you know, one officer that is head over heels for, you know, the, you know, female dispatcher for the opposing, you know, office that...
Yeah, Ursula, played by Marissa Coughlin.
Who was not at all evil, so I don't know why they named her after a villain.
Nor did she have tentacles.
No.
At least none that I saw.
That's the Japanese remake.
Yes. Oh, and to some of the...
Ursula,
like,
gone wild.
Oh... And something like the dumb, like, humor with her, too, was funny. Like, yeah, everybody keeps calling her Charlie's Angel. Like, oh, yeah, it's like the 100th time I've heard that. And when they get into, like, a big fight with the local PD at a murder scene, you know, like, when they're at the baseball game earlier, later, and she's like, yeah, I'm sorry about punching you in the face. Like, tell you what, you know, why don't you just, like, yeah, pay me back. Go ahead and hit me in the face. And she closes her eyes, and a baseball hits her in the face, and she thinks he actually punched him. He's like, what'd I do? And then when Foster goes to the station and starts, like, trying to flash her, and he's, like, you know, calling in a fake, you know, phone call. He's like, oh, my God, there's a streaker outside of your station. He's coming back to the window. And he's, like, flashing. He's like, oh, my God, he's hung like a moose. And she sneaks up behind him with a voice changer and, like, sticks a shotgun in his butt. And he's like, I'm going to show you where the wild monkey goes or something like that. Yeah. He's like, help.
Yeah, those types of things don't happen in real life. Don't take notes and expect that to work.
Yes, yeah.
You're not Kevin Smith. You can't pull that off.
Yeah, no flashing in the trench coat. Yeah, unless you're trying to cosplay as Foster at Dragon.
Wear a pasty. Georgia decency law still applies.
Oh, but that's the thing. And then the bear fucker costume. I want to see somebody wear that to, like, Dragon Con. Oh.
Yeah, that to me, I was like, of all the things, like, we're going to create a diversion. That's a hell of a diversion.
Like, yeah.
There's nothing in a rule book anywhere that, you know, like, no scenario prepares you for that. Like,
yeah, it's like, I miss that training class.
Yeah. Like,
it's the one where, like, you know, the phones keep ringing. They're like, that's the third call we've got. We've got to go check this out. Because that's one of them, you're like, you get the call, you're like, yeah, these people are crazy. There's no way there's somebody fighting a bear in the woods.
Yeah. Not sure if the tranquilizers would be for the person or the bear at that point. Like,
and this them trying to like, you know, sir, bear fucker, do you need assistance?
What are you going to do? Going to run up there and give him a little handy? little bear reach around?
God. No. Just no.
This can't... We got to segue into something different, because this is not going to go well.
So, the plot of the movie.
There's a plot? Oh, yeah, there's a plot.
There's a series of, like, you know...
unfortunate events.
Sure, we'll go with that. a series of, like, you know, skits of hilarious traffic stops. And mixed in it, there's a, you know, drug conspiracy that, you know, they find a dead woman with a monkey tattoo on her. Johnny Chimpo, who is apparently... I never heard of Afghanimation, but, yeah, it's cheap, you know, cheap Afghan knockoffs of Japanese animation.
Huh. So that's a thing.
And smuggling bales of weed through Vermont from Canada. So, yeah, as they're...
trying to fight off the pig. Who's preventing them from processing a crime scene.
Yeah, that's not one I would want to have to deal with there.
Dude, pigs are awesome. They make bacon.
They are bacon.
Yes. Delicious. Delicious bacon.
Oh. Plus, that pig would have totally ate that corpse.
God, speaking of which, I was watching a prison documentary the other day, and literally, like, this woman's like, yeah, well, you know, I caught this guy trying to steal my meth, so we fed him to the hogs. And
oh, God. It's like,
there's nothing left but his fingernails. It's like, damn, that's brutal. Like,
so,
shit.
Yeah. There's your pro tip. If you need to get rid of a body, have pigs.
Damn. Don't visit a pig farm anytime soon.
Oh. But yeah, the... you have the... yeah, the cast of characters. You've got Rabbit, who is the rookie of the group and is getting all the shit from everybody. But yet, you know, wants to... you know, be there. But yeah, the stuff they do to him, like, you know, they got him locked in a locker full of shaving cream and put soap in his drinks and stuff and just dumb shit. And then you have the infamous syrup chugging scene.
Yeah, like, does that even work? Like, to me, syrup is so thick. Like, there's no chugging that. Like,
well, I heard, like, they tried to do it with sweet tea, but it was just too liquidy, and it was obvious that it wasn't syrup, so they finally just actually chugged syrup and almost had, like, a diabetic coma after shooting the scene. They had drank so much syrup. Because, yeah, that's got to be just, oh, there's so much sugar.
Yeah. I didn't realize they actually did syrup in the scene, like.
Yeah. Because it was like, you know, they tried to do, you know, fake syrup, but it was just like, no, it just doesn't look right. It's too liquidy. We gotta go real.
Can I get some molasses and thicken that shit up?
Oh. And then, yeah, yeah, and they're like, he's like, you know, it's not fair. You know, you've got those skinny, you know, Max, like, you can't beat him. You got those skinny little lips. And he has those, you know, big, beautiful brown lips. He's like, yeah, most of my powers derive from my ability to like, kiss ass pretty much.
Ow.
Your brain itch?
Yes, a little bit. Like, you were trying to explain a plot, and the plot was, so they're chugging syrup.
Pretty much.
So, basically, the plot devises of a few random skits, but overall, you got the local cops who are basically drug kingpins, in a sense. Like, you know, so they're in on all of the evidence, all of the drug running and everything, and...
basically, you know, trying to make the troopers look bad so they'll get their shut down, so then they have no competition to prevent them from running drugs through Vermont and Spayberry.
Spayberry. Mulberry Lane. yeah. A lot of, great one-liners and everything else, though. Like, this is definitely a, it's...
I mean, this is where Who Wants a Mustache Ride came from. Yeah. I mean, as a guy who used to have a mustache before I grew a beard, I got so much, traction out of that line.
As a guy that got a lot of shit for sort of resembling one of said characters.
That's the only downside of this movie. If you're, a big dude in law enforcement with a mustache, fucking everybody called you Farva. And, that's, the only downside of this movie. I'm like, I'm not fucking Farva. Go fuck yourself. I don't want no damn liter of cola.
A cup of cola? No, I want a damn liter of cola.
I don't want a large Farva. I want a liter of cola. And, of course, shenanigans. I mean, that's another one that... use in daily language a lot because the Irish captain, he's like, I don't want to hear any more shenanigans, but Captain, our shenanigans are fun and cheeky. Farva's shenanigans are evil and cruel. They're not really shenanigans, more like evil shenanigans. I swear to God, I'm gonna pistol whip the next one of you that says shenanigans.
But I mean, that was kind of the thing, Farva being on dispatch because he definitely his antics, are
he's got
much more over the top. Yes,
he's a guy that would definitely be in anger management training.
But I mean, I do kind of like the idea, the way they tried to lighten his character. So, once they finally do let him back on the road and, he's there with his partner and it's like, we got to come up with a cool squad car name. So, that's where the whole Car Ramrod thing comes from. And
yeah, you're Ramathorn, I'm Rod Farb. We could be Car Ramrod. Because I want to play the little games like you and Rabbit and all them play. We'll call somebody Pussy. He's like, what are you talking about? The thing Foster. He's like, actually, they said, see how many times you could say meow. Meow? Ooh, y'all are crazy. Hell, I'll call a guy Chicken Fucker for $20. License and registration, Chicken Fucker. Oh,
yeah, that to me, was, the guy that wanted to see the action and be involved in the action, but in, no way was he equipped to handle said action. And you even see that in the film where, basically he ends up, selling out to the other police force and gives away all of the secrets and everything else because they're like, oh yeah, we'll put you on the road and we'll make you the freaking police of the year or whatever, and so easily manipulated.
Yeah, and he had his inflatable woman in the trunk. And then the whole montage of them, stealing his patrol car and getting drunk when they finally all get, shut down and just pulling people over drunk and, the captain's, he's finally in on the shenanigans because he don't give a fuck anymore and he's, pissing on some dude's car while he's trying to write him a ticket. He's like, when you gotta go, you gotta go. But then they drunkenly find out that what's really going on and make the huge drug bust and shut the PD down. With no weapons, so they have to be creative and hook a inflatable woman with road flares to the roof of the car for. I mean, if you're gonna need some distraction, that's a pretty good distraction. You're like, the fuck is that?
That's not something you see every day.
No,
life doesn't prepare you for that.
But yeah, these guys, like I said, they've especially they've all continued to work and produce and write. But Jay Chandra Rasker, however, Jay, because pronouncing his name is damn near impossible. He's gone on to become a big time director, at least in TV. I mean, you look at his IMDb page, he's pretty much directed at least a couple episodes of nearly every popular TV show that's on right now, and even got to direct a big budget movie. The Dukes of Hazzard movie with, Johnny Knoxville and Willie Nelson and Stifler, which I almost consider this another Broken Lizard movie because he manages to give pretty much all the guys at least a cameo in the movie. Kevin Heffernan plays like the crazy conspiracy redneck guy. But then when the Duke boys get in a chase down at like Georgia Tech, the campus cops that are chasing them in their golf carts is freaking Mac and Foster. And pretty much like I think everybody shows up at least once in the movie. So it's almost a...
it's almost like a, you know, a little bit of a throwback. Like, here, guys, you know.
This is Super Troopers if we had a big budget. But, you know, doing that movie and proving that they could, you know, write and direct on a big studio level, you know, allowed them higher budgets and more freedom in their own movies. Because they came out with, after that, they had 2006 Beer Fest, which had a $17 million budget, you know, when they're used to working like with, you know, $1 million budgets.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so 17 and a half, you know, grossed, you know, a little over 20 million in the box office. And I mean, I feel like, you know, for me, like, you know, Beer Fest, you know, really took on its own. Like, I can remember, like, you know, everybody talking about Beer Fest and how awesome of a movie it was. Like, this was one of those movies that you saw it once and then you watched it like 10 more times after that.
Anytime you like want to have a couple beers and get drunk, like you got to put on Beer Fest. It's one of those movies that, you know, theatrically they've never been hugely successful, but they've you know, make their money, plus, you know, they're the home video freaking cult following they acquire later on. You know, it's those movies kind of live on for forever. Because one of the is, you know, because that's one thing, their movies are, they're kind of hard to see in theaters because they're so good to have to see when you're like sitting at home drunk off your ass with your buddies. It's one that, you know, well, now that we have like theaters that sell alcohol, I guess you could, yeah, do that more. But back in the day in the, you know, dry theaters, it's, you know, what wasn't as cool. We're going to have to go see Super Troopers 2 the freaking, whatever studio movie grill. So we can have a couple beers while we're watching it.
I mean, there's a bar. They got like 5 bottles of liquor and like 3 beers on the menu. Like, come on, man. They're trying. They're failing pretty hard, but they're trying.
Yeah, like, no, I need to go to the theater where people will actually bring me alcohol to my chair so I don't miss any scenes when I go for a reload.
So, yeah, Beer Fest, like, freaking awesome movie. So, you know, basically the plot here is, you know, there's a German born grandfather, John von Hofenstein.
Wolfhausen.
Yeah, that's it.
Played by Donald Sutherland. Like, that's another thing too about, you know, the kind of success that they gained. They actually got like big name actors and stuff for their next film. I mean, with Super Troopers, with the exception of Brian Cox, most of the guys were people you'd never heard of, never seen. You know, there's a few cameos by some comedians here and there. But yeah, you get to Beer Fest, you got Will Forte, what's the guy's name? Eric Christian Olsen, who's on, you know, NCIS LA. Freaking MC Gainey is like the weird priest at the beginning. But yeah, Donald Sutherland, Cloris Leachman as the grandma. I mean, it was like some pretty big name actors in this movie.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the overall plot like was like actually enjoyable. I mean, you know, it was lighthearted, but it was like, you know, almost like serious enough to where it was like, shit. Or, you know, just as, you know, I mean, you know, 2006, you know, I out of high school for a few years at that point. So this was when, you know, it's, you know, kind of my prime partying time. So it was, you know, I want to fucking live Beer Fest.
Exactly. We gotta compete in the beer games. Because that was the thing, too. This was it was their version of a underdog sports movie. I mean, like Best of the Best or any of these movies where, you know, a ragtag group of guys have to, you know, come together and compete in the Olympics.
I mean, it's almost like the Jamaican bobsled team.
Yeah, like, you know, stuff like that. It's like their version of one of these inspirational sports movies. But instead of sports, it was beer.
And a family legacy.
Yeah, because Jim and Todd Wolfhouse, their grandfather passes away, and their grandmother tells them that there's a family tradition that you know, his ashes have to be put in rest in the you know, at this festival in the family mortuary or whatever. But the festival turns out to be Oktoberfest. And then they, you know, discover that their family owned like the biggest brewery in Bavaria or whatnot, and yeah, they're like the champions of this underground beer drinking Olympics, where it's like, yeah, you know, the English team and the Irish team, and it's like the Olympics, but there's like no Americans. Apparently, Americans, you know, aren't drinkers according to them.
Well, I mean, you know, what's the stigma of the American beer drinker? I mean, now we've gotten, you know, craft beer, and you know, things are, you know, shifting a little bit to where the U.S. But I mean, by and large, the U.S. was, yep, you're drinking Budweiser, Miller Genuine Draft, Lighthouse, or, you know, some other, you know, what, you know, if you're comparing to a German beer company, you're not drinking beer.
Yeah. And, and then, of course, when they meet the Germans, they hate them because they say their grandfather stole the family recipe, which was the greatest beer in all of Germany. And it's like, and now we're stuck with, like, fourth best behind, Heineken, fuck was the beer? But it was like, there's like, they named three, and they're like, and Umbex? Umbex, yes! And then their grandmother supposedly was a whore, and their grandfather was the illegitimate heir to the throne, and they fled to America. But yeah, I'd love that. There's like a little throwaway joke when they're like, oh yeah, well, we challenge y'all to a chug off. He's like, give us your two. He's like, you fancy y'all? Or he's like, y'all fancy? I guess you fancy yourself drinkers, huh? He's like, well, we did just beat the Irish, so yeah, I think we're drinkers. It's just a little simple joke, but I'm like, that's funny. Making fun of Irish stereotypes.
But I mean, you know, some of the, you know, the games. I mean, I really think this is one of the films that really put, you know, beer pong on the map. I mean, can remember after Beer Fest, Beer Pong exploded. Like, I mean, it was always kind of a thing here and there, but I mean, you know,
traditional beer pong too, where it's like you're actually trying to hit the ball into a cup with a actual pong. And then later on, you know, they developed the game Beirut, which is what today we call beer pong, where you're just throwing the ball straight in the little collection of cups. But back in the day, you actually had to hit the damn cup with the paddle, which seems infinitely more hard, especially when you're drunk and your aim's a little off. I guess that's when we're like, this is taking too long. Let's just put a whole bunch of cups and throw the balls at them so it'll be easier.
But I mean, that and the freaking quarters, like, I mean, which, I don't know. I mean, I can remember as a, you know, kid, like, watching people play quarters and stuff. So, I mean, but I mean, it was.
But they had like turbo, like, quarters, yeah, long distance quarters, trick shot quarters, and this, like, and then what, the monkey chug, like the upside down chugging, and the long pour. I mean, there was so many drinking games that I'm like, I've never even, like, I thought I was a drinker until I saw this movie. There's like so many events that I'm not familiar with.
I could train to be an Olympian.
And then of course Das Boot.
Yes, the epic, you know. And I mean, I kind of like it, you know, because they're going through the whole science of, well, when you get to the bubble, if you just rotate the cup, you know,
it'll cause a vortex and shoot it down your throat.
But yeah, so the whole science behind DOS Boot was, you know, unlocked.
Yeah, you got to spin it. But yeah, then the English guys, they meet and explain Beer Fest to them, and then they're like, what? Why does the last guy drink out of a shoe? That's DOS Boot. Cruel mistress she is. I just loved, like, the English guys. They were just, I don't know, drunken English people just are amusing.
I think English people just in general are amusing for some reason. I don't know what it is.
I mean, you can say, like, the worst things, but with that accent, it's just charming.
A bugger. Poppycock.
Yeah. So, yeah, they get their asses kicked by the Germans, so they decide to go home in all, like, you know, traditional sports movies. You got to lose really big, and then you got to go home and train to come back and win. So they go home and recruit a team of professional drinkers to compete in next year's Beer Fest, which includes Kevin Heffernan as Landfill, a competitive eater and mass drinker, and of course Jay as Barry Badowith, who is a beer games expert who has fallen on hard times, as most, like said, sports movies go, who's now become a male prostitute. And then, of course, the beer scientist, Fink, which, you know, Steve Lemmy, who played Mac in the first movie, almost unrecognizable in this. I mean, he shaved his head to make it look like he was going, you know, partially bald, and then had to gain, I don't know how much weight to, like, because he's kind of in good shape in freaking Super Troopers, and now he's like this little fat
we're drinking real scientist beer. Guy.
Who's jerking off frogs for science. It's okay to jerk off frogs as long as it's for science. I don't know why that was... They never fully explain the purpose of his... to something to do with like genetics and cloning that they needed to gather frog semen samples. But yeah, that's... So the weird thing, like when they're trying to convince him to like join the team, and he's there like working the frog, and the frog's like ribbit, 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 and just keeps getting faster and faster, and then he stops to talk, and the frog's like starts getting pissed off. He's like, "Oh, sorry."
And they say only humans do it for pleasure.
And his collection of yarmulkes that like kept changing throughout the movie, and.
I mean, I love that whole part where, you know, the Germans are giving, you know, him shit about his little hat, and, you know, one of the guys, like, knocks it off, and is like, oh, you lost your little hat, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, then you see the eye, and it's like,
Star David
he's
inside.
Got the eye of the Jew.
Which is apparently better than Eye of the Tiger. He's like, oh, no, that got to put him on the end now. He's the anchor. He's got the eye of the Jew. He can beat him. Oh. And then, like, the jokes throughout of they're like, you know, there's no way our grandma's a whore. And then as they're training, they accidentally, like, their grandfather left him this doll he had had since he was a kid. And they're like, there's no way our grandfather stole that recipe because he made sausage. He never made beer. And, like, there's no way our grandma's a whore. And then they break the doll and they found the recipe inside. Apparently he had it all this time, didn't know it. So they brew it. And it's, like, the best beer ever. It just brings, like, tears to your eyes. And they're like, I want to, like, you know, live in this. Like, I would have sex with this beer. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, one of them starts getting really sad. Like, what's wrong? He's like, if the beer recipe's real, that means Graham really was a whore. And they're like, no! It is before that, before she finally, like, admits to it. Like, the whole, like, they go to her house to ask her about how Germans drink so well. And she's like, oh, you got to, you know, really relax your throat. Like, you know, most people, I can fit like a whole, like, you know, 13-inch kielbasa down my throat. And it's like, y'all want to sing? They're like, no. And then she goes to give him some sausage. She's like, oh, let me warm that up for you. And starts giving like the sausage, like a hand shanty to warm up the sausage. And they're like, there's nothing weird about that. People have been warming sausages like that for years. I'm like, would you say it's their oldest profession? It's like, shut up.
Yeah, like that whole, you know, state of denial was freaking awesome.
Oh, and then like their training montages of like, is it, they also train by drinking the urine of a yak. Well, why would they do that? Pretty much, if you can chug yak piss, you can chug anything.
I mean, which almost makes sense.
Which kind of looked like lemon lime Gatorade. I'm hoping that's what they're using and not really yak piss for authenticity. I mean, they did have to chug the syrup, so, you know, it just doesn't look right on camera. We're going to have to use real piss.
Shenanigans.
Yeah. Oh.
This beer tastes like piss. Your beer is piss.
Well, we just serve piss warm chongo here. Oh, and then when they go out, you know, competing with, like, the college kids to, get some real-life training. like I said, that was one where they're like, there's all kind of weird-ass drinking games they were doing. But then when the cops show up and they all scatter, and, like, one of them's hiding in the bush, and the guy's like, dude, aren't you, like, 40? Why are you hiding? He's like, oh, yeah. And that's another thing. Do you remember the scene from Super Troopers where Mac is looking at the billboard of the hot lady's lips blowing on the dice and, like, you know, spanking it with a speed gun?
Yes.
Those lips belong to the actress who plays Landfill's wife in the movie. So everybody from Super Troopers got to come back.
Yay!
And when you look at like some of the behind-the-scenes stuff of these movies, like it's hilarious like their inspirations they come up with to write these things. It sounds like dumb shit we would come up with because they were like, well, we were on this road trip to go to like a friend's wedding or something, and we got pulled over a lot, and we were like pretty much all on drugs when we got stopped, and we thought about like, wouldn't it be funny if the cops knew we were high and had a sense of humor about it? They could totally fuck with us. And that's how we came up with the idea of Super Troopers. And with this, they were like, yeah, we were doing a live show in, I think it was like Australia or something, in our cop uniforms, and we challenged like a team of guys to a chugging contest. And we're like, this would be a cool idea for a movie. And then we had to get escorted out of there because we insulted Russell Crowe or some shit. Apparently, if you're in Australia, do not insult Russell Crowe. They will kick your ass.
Or box the kangaroo. That's not going to work well either.
Oh, just got to duck and move, man.
No, it'll kick your ass. It'll kick your ass, bro.
I have seen a kangaroo kick a guy in the nuts one time. That was hilarious. That's when I thought I needed to quit drinking because I walked out of a Kroger and a kangaroo came hopping by. And I was like, oh, damn, I need to cut back. And then I saw a van. Apparently, there was like a kangaroo experience, and the kangaroo had escaped from the van. There was a dude chasing him around the parking lot. But when he got close enough to try to grab, he grabbed his tail, and it jumped up, kicked him in the balls, and ran off again. it was like if, you know, like if no one believes that story, I'm like, this is one of those things, I'm like, no one's going to believe this shit. It's just too weird. This is like it's a bad SNL sketch. But it was real life.
And it was back before there were cell phones to document.
I know. I'd had my cell phone on me, that would have been a like freaking YouTube viral clip easy. I could have started my whole YouTube career instead of making podcasts.
Yep.
Missed opportunities, man.
Damn it, Steve Jobs cost you that one.
Yep. but yeah, the freaking German guys too are just like so. I mean, the father, Baron von Wolfhausen, is like the only German guy. And well, then the two like big bodybuilder Arnold Schwarzenegger looking dudes. But then the rest of them are like just comedians and there's like the worst German accents. And but yeah, there's like freaking Will Forte from Saturday Night Live is, you know, one of the main German brothers. And like they're do such stereotypical German things. Like they're always wearing lederhosen. But then when they're going to go spy on the American team, who's now they figured out does have the beer recipe. They're in Colorado, but they have a German submarine in the lake watching them. It's like we're drinking Das Boot in Das Boot.
I mean, if you're going to spy on somebody, though, they're not going to anticipate a submarine.
Yeah. Yeah, I've actually drank in a Das Boot one time. There's a little German restaurant. And they actually had a Das Boot. I'm like, I had to call a ride home after
I've
that.
I've had like the liter sized Das Boot, but I haven't had the full. You know.
That takes a while to consume. Yeah, we got talking to the German guys, and they kept giving us like, they brought out a little Das Boot. Then they were drinking. It was like they said a blackberry brandy, but it was basically German moonshine. Yeah, we had to call a ride home that night. Das Boot kicked our ass. I didn't remember to spin it though, so
Bubble?
Yes, we made it past the bubble.
Which that place is really awesome. Very authentic. And it's still around too. Got an excellent little beer garden too.
Damn good strudel. Pretty good Reuben sandwiches too. and
Spatzel.
Yeah. But then like, you know, every like Rocky or sports movie has to have that moment where things are going good, and then the team almost falls apart, and they have to rally and come back together. Where in this one, you know, the Germans try to send a secret agent in to try to steal the recipe, and she ends up murdering Landfill and drowning him in a vat of beer, which, if you gotta go, it's not a bad way to go. But then in true soap opera style, his twin brother, Gil, shows up to replace him. He's like, in fact, call me Landfill, you know, just to honor his name. Like, yeah, that won't be weird at all. And then, like, you see him, like, banging Landfill's wife, too. And you're like, Landfill 2 is so much better. She just, like, replaces his photo.
It was a sad day.
Oh, and when, the freaking motivational speech by Graham, when she shows up and is like, you know, you'll have to do this for your friend to get better. And then Barry's like, I can't do it. You know, I was playing a high stakes game of beer pong and ding dang or something like that. And apparently those guys were bad losers because they shoved a ping pong paddle up my ass. And they're like, having a, you know, ping pong, you know, handle up your, no, they sent it in the wide style. I've been pooping pancakes ever since. And she's like, Mr. Badenath, I've had all kind of things shoved up my ass. It's no big deal. You get over it.
Yes. best motivational speech ever.
Yeah, but then they go to and compete, and the concept of drunken recall too. Because once they get there, they don't remember where it's at. They're like, "Well, we were hammered ass drunk," and of course, the scientist is like, well, there's this thing I did a study on, drunken recall. You get people drunk and you teach them stuff. They don't remember it when they're sober, but as soon as they get drunk again, they'll remember everything you teach them. So we just got to get you drunk so you can remember. So he starts drinking all kind of beers. Like, you remember anything yet? He's like, no, but I have been training for a beer drinking competition for the last, you know, year. So it may take a little more than this to get me drunk. So then they make him chug freaking Goldschlager, which just reminds me of freaking At Night She Cries while he rides his teeth. The freaking Schlager brothers.
Reminds me of being too young to consume alcohol, and I don't know why there was always Goldschlager. Like, the worst thing that you could ever want to drink, but it was there. Like,
there was, I remember, back when it was, we were too young to, like, buy alcohol, so we were, had to drink whatever we could talk, like, somebody's older sister into buying us. There was always Goldschlager, peppermint schnapps, and it was Aftershock, the cinnamon whiskey that had, like, the fake sugar ice cubes in it. Oh, God, no wonder we were so hungover then, all that fucking sugary shit we were drinking. But then we grew up and found whiskey.
I found SEMA.
Oh, and some St. Ives.
And that died. And then it came back.
I'm all about that Zima and Jollies, yo.
Zima and Jollies.
Yeah, but then once they, compete and win and, you know, they end up having, they end up betting the German guy because they cheat and lose at first because, like, let them know that, like, hey, we killed your brother and, you know, causes him to lose the final competition. They're like, all right, double or nothing. We'll give you the beer recipe against, you know, the brewery. You know, one more chance, all boots. And of course, they win and get the brewery and whatnot. And then to celebrate, they go to Amsterdam and run into Willie Nelson, who invites them into a underground pot smoking competition. And the big joke was, like, coming soon, Potfest, which never happened. And they're like, it was all just a joke anyway. But now at this point, they're like, you know, there's so many people said we should make this movie. Like, after Super Troopers 2, like, I think Potfest may be their next thing in the books.
I mean, we've seen that happen with quite a few, you know, parody trailers and things that weren't really designed to be a final concept.
That's the whole way the Machete movies got made, where it was a joke trailer that everyone was like, that's fucking hilarious, you should do that. And they did it.
A couple of times.
Yeah, and they've done a few other movies. They had, like, Salmon Slammin', and which was, like, their, almost like their version of Waiting, which was, like, a comedy about, you know, waiters and stuff that weren't nearly as big. But then they also tried to do a horror movie.
They did that, and then they also did their whole, like, you know, live action, like, you know, stand-up skits. So, but yes, let's talk about the horror of Club Dread.
Yeah, they, in 2004, this was like the first movie I think they made after Super Troopers, where they're all staff on a
Paradise Island, man.
Yeah, ran by basically Bill Paxton, playing Coconut Pete, which was basically a Jimmy Buffett ripoff. Instead of Margaritaville, his big hit song was Pina Colada Berg.
7 years before Margaritaville, though, man. Get it right. Don't get it twisted.
Oh, yeah. Friggin' Jimmy Buffett ripped him off. That was, like, his big sore spot with him. Kind of remind me a little bit of Island Jim.
Like, if you were doing an island theme movie, yes, absolutely.
Have you seen Island Jim has come out with his own beef jerky now?
I have not seen that. But.
Yes, I saw it the other day at the cigar shop. It's pineapple coconut flavored beef jerky.
I must give that a try. I didn't know it exists.
I've not tried it yet, but it was in like an Island Gem cigar box and had Island Gem on the wrapper. I was like, dude's making jerky now. What the fuck?
Buy one cigar, get one jerky. I mean, but you know what?
Maybe we'll have to do that for review.
If I'm chilling on vacation or whatever, like
maybe we'll have to do that. Or we'll you know do a segment and compare or combine the Island Gem number 2 with the beef jerky and see if you know we've paired alcohol with the cigars. Try pairing beef jerky with cigars and see how that that turns out.
I mean, that could be a thing.
Yeah, we start doing a jerky review. Our new segment.
Anybody want to send us some fucking jerky? I'm down. Yeah, we need all day, every day.
We need a jerky sponsor for the podcast. Oh, so yeah, like it's been a long time since I've seen Club Dread. I think I saw it when it came out, but I've not had a chance to recently review it. So,
well, you're just missing out on all the fun, my friend.
Club Dread.
So, all right, here's the premise. Pleasure Island. You get dropped off on a boat. Boat goes away. You party for a week. Boat comes back, and you go home to your mundane life. Well, in this rendition...
That sounds awesome. I want to do that.
Well, here's the catch.
Let's go on the cigar safari.
It's just like every other movie that involves sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Do any of those things, you will find yourself murdered in the jungle.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's kind of the premise. So you've got the staff, and really this film revolves around the staff and them trying to figure out, one, who this killer is.
And trying not to panic the tourists.
Not to freak out and, you know, have mass chaos.
Yeah, because apparently there was a former employee who lost his shit and tried to kill everybody and then has some kind of like the original Friday the 13th was out to get the camp counselors, but in this time point, the killer is out to get the Paradise Island staff.
Well, I mean, they did steal his weed and, you know, have sex in the mausoleum. So, I mean, there's the two cardinal rules broken, you know. Sex in a sacred place and drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're toast. I mean,
it turns out it was like pretty much one of the employees was a stalker and found out I almost called him Island Jim. Coconut Pete was gonna give the island to one of the other employees.
Well, that's what he does, is, you know, so one of the other employees is actually Island Pete's, like, nephew or something like that. So, anyway, the dude was the DJ, always, you know, kind of doing drugs and, you know, was, like, sort of the irresponsible one. So, you know, this other guy is like, hey, I've worked hard, you know, I've done everything by the book, and he signs, you know, the island away to this deadbeat.
Yeah,
so
anybody who's been skipped over for
island,
promotion, you know, gets his feeling a little bit.
So if I can't have the island, nobody can have the island type thing. But just some of the antics. So, you know, and you think about paradise and massages being, you know, a big part of, you know, that nice, relaxing escape from reality. Well, the dude that they bring in, like, is like a master of all sorts of martial arts and, like, massage stuff. So it's like, you know, he touches a spot on your lip, instantly gives a girl an orgasm. And I'm like, and I need that ability.
And it's
like,
freaking Farva, too. Yeah. So it's like him playing, like, the badass yoga guy. And even the part, like, they're trying to hide from the killer, like, under a bed, and he's too fat to fit under the bed, so he starts, like, meditating and breathing and shrinks himself down enough to get under the bed. It's just so ridiculous. And then, of course, like, you know, Sam, who is the killer, played by the guy who played Rabbit, and so him as, like, the psycho killer is just, you know, kind of ridiculous. And even, and of course, in traditional horror movie fashion, when you think the killer's dead, he's never actually dead, because...
No.
You know, they cut him in half when they take off on a boat, and you see, like, his, like, severed lower half, like, swimming after the boat, even after he's been, like, completely severed in two.
Well, I mean, and actually, that's, you know, spoiler alert. So, you know, basically, you know, that severed, the upper torso grabs onto the boat and ends up grabbing the girl, and then it turns into fucking Farva and this half torso doing this 360 swing.
One of the things I remember
for cheesy
from it,
horror comedy, it was everything I expected.
Oh, the one thing I saw in that movie, I was like, I want to do that. Was they had a hedge maze, but it was a live action version of Pac-Man. I was like, that actually looks fucking fun. I want to do that.
You know, so that actually, you know, like change the music and, you know, have like freaking colored potato sacks that you'd throw over yourself. So, you know, when it was safe to consume, and even had people running around as giant bananas and strawberries and stuff. So,
oh yeah. I've not gone on a cruise yet. I got one planned, but that looks like ridiculous island life you would do if you were at one of these paradise resorts. I was like, I want to go somewhere and play live action Pac-Man and sing Pina Coladaberg.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to one of those Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville restaurants?
I think maybe once. I don't know. It's weird. I was never really a Jimmy Buffett like type fan for some reason. Like, I never really got into the whole, like, you know, island life. Like
The parrot heads. But they built one in Gatlinburg, or Pigeon Forge, and I went to it when I was up there one time. And they had this giant, probably 7-8 foot, like, fake blender in the middle of the restaurant. And once, like, every hour or so, they play Margaritaville, and that thing fills up with, like, yellowish green liquid that looks like a giant margarita and spins around, and everybody sings Margaritaville.
So I'm really disappointed that it's not actual margarita. Like, no. You know, I mean,
it could have been. I didn't try to drink out of it, but yeah, I'm pretty sure it was just a fountain with some food coloring.
You know, I mean, that to me would be, you know, the epicness. Like, holy shit, there's 8 feet of margarita in front of me.
It was fun. They had people walking around in there on stilts doing balloon animals and shit. It was weird. It kind of made me want to drink a couple margaritas.
I never really know how to order margaritas. It's not really something that I'm like, oh, I'm craving a margarita. I was always more, hey, I want a whiskey or, sure. You know.
I mean, if you're going to do island drinks, you know, good mojito, some pina coladas. Yeah, I just don't like the salt in the margarita. If you're going to drink a margarita, you need to be like straight up on the rocks. I'm not down to the blended frozen margaritas with the salt and everything. I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, that wasn't never really my thing.
It's the only time it's acceptable to drink fruity ass drinks is when you're on a beach somewhere.
Or a cruise ship.
Yeah. Yeah, then it's okay for island life, yeah. But, you know, throw on a Hawaiian t-shirt and, like, a boonie hat and chuck some fruity tropical drinks. But only on vacation. The rest of the time, you're like, no, we're going to have to revoke your man card.
Yeah. So, you know, getting back to Club Dread. So, I mean, this film definitely had some interesting kills. Like, you know, lots of beheadings, and I don't know, it was almost like, I almost felt like I was watching, like, there was a video game on PlayStation, I guess it was on Xbox and some other platforms, but Dead Island, basically you're on this island with a bunch of zombies.
Yeah.
Kind of had that feel to it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like a slasher version of Dead Island.
But, you know, this here, you know, it's weird because it's comedy, but, you know, the whole slasher film element of it, like, almost kind of reminds me of what, the whole, you know, I Know What You Did Last Summer. What was the parody of those?
Was it the...
Shit, I can't remember what
yeah,
but, it...
Yeah, because the second I Know What You Did Last Summer did take place on, like, some island resort, but, you know... I don't remember I know, like, Scary Movie kind of made fun of that a little bit.
No, that's it. That's what I was trying to think of. Scary Movie. So it kind of had that whole vibe to it. So, you know, if you're looking for something ridiculous that doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, that, you know, is in very typical, you know, Broken Lizard fashion, I mean, it's not a bad movie.
Yeah, it's not their best work, but it's one of those that you got to see at least once. It's a fun, you know, dude, if you want to see a slasher movie, but you also want to laugh, you know, give it a watch.
But, I mean, it's kind of cool because, I mean, you know, the whole murder mystery, like, I feel like, you know, people that do, like, the whole, you know, like, murder mystery dinners.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel like, you know, that's what this was because, you know, people are dying and They don't know who the killer is, and the only thing they have is this note that's basically like, continue doing your jobs, you know, otherwise all the guests are going to die or something.
Like, yeah, so they got to keep covering up the murders and trying to figure out who it is, not to spook the guests and cause mass panic and whatnot. But yeah, that's...
I mean, I think probably one of the most iconic scenes for me is, you know, the DJ that, you know, gets the deed signed over to him. Well, basically he gets beheaded and they walk into the DJ booth because all the music and lights and stuff are playing when all the other power to the island has been cut off. And, you know, there's the head spinning around on a, you know, freaking record player.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, even the death sequences are, you know, for the most part, relatively amusing.
Yeah.
And there's references to seppuku, even though nobody can remember what that is.
So as we kind of wrap things up here, do you have a favorite moment, favorite character from any of the movies?
All the characters from all the movies. That's too much of a cop-out. You know, for me, I think I always sort of like the character of Rabbit from Super Troopers. You know, from Beer Fest.
We forgot about the when he pulls over the Germans in Super Troopers. Oh, and he's like, you know, making out with the girl, and they end up having to arrest him because it's a stolen car. And they're having to carry Jay's kid around. And he's like, you can go sit in Uncle Rabbit's lap. That's not a good idea right now.
And that weird, about you just sit in the middle?
And that weird German techno that sounds like every other techno song. That, yeah. Oh, and I think my favorite character is Steve Lemmy. He always has like the best lines and plays like the weirdest character. I mean, he was hilarious as Fink in Beer Fest.
Yeah, I was going to say Fink.
And he had some of the best jokes and lines in Super Troopers. I mean, he's the guy that was crazy enough to wear a bulletproof cup. And I love that scene where they're shooting him in the nuts.
Like, we typically use blanks.
Yeah, and the chief shows up and he's like, oh, y'all are crazy. He's like, I remember playing this trick, you know, but usually it was the rookie that got naked because about at that point, like, they'd given the cup to Rabbit and was convincing him to get shot. And he's like, and he turns and shoots the window out of the car and he's like, and we also use blanks. Mac, you're a sick fuck. Thanks, Captain. But yeah, that and what's funny, I heard like in the filming of that, they actually filmed that at a prison gun range. So the prison was like up on the hill from the range, and inmates could see out the windows or whatever at him out there being naked. And apparently he got some like serious catcalling from the from the inmates. Oh, so what's your final thoughts on this here cigar?
Man, all the final thoughts. The cigar was awesome. You know,
I've not had a bad AJ Fernandez cigar.
I mean, it is blended so well. All of the flavors complement. I mean, there's chocolate, there's woodiness, there's, you know, just a touch of spice. I mean, you know, it's complex. Like, you know, it's one.
And it's maintained that strength too throughout. So it's like,
I mean, it's
not only is the
very
stayed
consistent,
very full bodied. It's also, you know, pretty, you know,
but
good,
you know,
strength
once
throughout.
Again, like, you know, okay, full body, but it doesn't, like, there's so much flavor in,
yeah,
everything
it's
else
balanced.
That
neither one overpowers, yeah, the other. Yeah, I've not had a bad AJ Fernandez cigar yet, and there's a, I haven't tried it yet, but there's a, well, I've tried the, he's just come out with a new edition of the New World and a new invention of the Enclave. I've tried the new World, and it's a damn good smoke. I've not had a chance to try the new Enclave yet, but maybe we'll bring those on an episode here in the future. And with that, we'll be right back.
Right, meow?
Meow.
Mick Blair. Mick Blair. Big Bear. Going down the road, got the fellas on the back. Chicken on his fingers and a Bud six pack. Drinking in the morning, little hair of the dog. He's sweet as a bird, but it smells like a hog. Big Bear, he's iron tough. Big Bear's got a chest like a rug. Big Bear, he don't take no guff. He's Big Bear.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Boozehounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for some Beer 30. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
So this week we've got Sierra Nevada's Sidecar, which is a orange pale ale. Kind of the idea for this was, well, I couldn't find a beer called Car Ramrod, so Sidecar was the next closest thing.
Close enough.
I always like to try to theme everything. So this comes in at about 5.3% ABV. 35 on the bitterness unit. So
yeah, it's definitely a hoppy IPA. But you know, they've added citrus and orange peel to the brew kettle and the fermenter to give it a zesty, citrusy.
Yeah,
kick.
So, I mean, it definitely has the, you know, a citrus kick, but it's also got, you know, quite a bit of, you know, kick from the hops. I mean, they're using Magnum, Cascade, Equinox, and Mandanera hops with a L yeast, and, you know, that's what's listed on the website anyway. Of course, you know, there's a caveat there that, you know, if the brewers decide that, hey, we want to switch something up for flavor, that's subject to brewer discretion. And, you know, as home brewers, I mean, that's kind of the thing is, you know, it's really all about science and experimenting.
Yeah, and they say they recommend this, you know, be had with marmalade, turnovers, creme brulee, you know, rich cheeses, grilled salmon, salad, orange glazed chicken, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, go have some Panda Express orange chicken and a Sierra Nevada sidecar and see how that pairs together.
I mean, the orange and orange, probably, I don't know. I
orange, mean, you glad you drank this?
You know, for me, because this is so, you know, hoppy to my palate, you know, this is something I want with a spicy dish, like... You know, that to me, like, spice and bitterness are you know, kind of two flavors that, you know, and I'm like, you know, I see where they're going with the, you know, orange glazed chicken because I'm a big fan of using, you know, a lot of citrus and stuff like that in my cooking. Overall, not a bad beer for the style for my palate personally.
Yeah, I'm not a big IPA drinker, but... The citrus, you know, it's not, you know, I hate drinking IPA when it's nothing but hops and bitterness. Well, that citrus zest kind of bounces out a little bit. It's not as, and you're right, like I said, you know, and if I'm having an IPA, something spicy, I think is a better pairing. But I mean, it's not a bad beer for the style.
No, not at all. And I mean, that's the thing too, is, you know, when you're talking about craft beer and everything, I mean, Sierra Nevada is probably the one company that comes to mind that does a phenomenal job. You know, and a lot of people, you know, don't necessarily consider Sierra Nevada craft, but I mean, they're one of the companies, you know, that, you know, founded, you know, the whole craft brew and, you know, are the reason that a lot of craft brewers, you know, started getting into homebrew. So... I mean, you know, the color here just looks absolutely gorgeous, though. That's one of the things. I mean, it's, you know, just, you know, bright orange. I mean, it almost looks like you're looking into a liquid orange pill. Like,
and another thing I like about that, you know, a lot of the big craft brew companies, too, are listing all the ingredients of their beers. So, you know, for a home brewer, it kind of gives you... You know, an idea if you wanted to try to say, you know, develop this recipe, you know, in your homebrew, they give you enough information to, you know, at least give you a starting point to
foundation and
to brew one of these.
And you know, a lot of times too, like you can find the, you know, clone recipes and stuff like that. And you know, I mean, I like looking at some of the clone recipes and saying, well, I like this beer, but you know, how about with a chocolate twist, or how about with, you know, some additional hops, or you know,
adding some chocolate malt to this. Be doing like a chocolate orange, that might be an interesting beer combination.
Well, we did, who was, I think it was Southern Tier that did the L'Orange.
Yeah.
That we had, and I think we both, you know, really enjoyed that beer. You know, so, I mean, there's definitely some.
And the alcohol content, too. I mean, it's only 5.3, where IPAs tend to be not only high in, you know, in, you know, bitterness, but then they also usually ramp up the alcohol.
See, that's almost what I'm after in an IPA. It's like
I'm triggering it to get drunk.
I need to get through the first three, and then everything else goes down smooth after that. Those first three, I really have to,
Some Dogfish Head 90.
You know,
you trigger six.
I gotta get my head rat. Yeah, head right, head rat. What?
Have you already been drinking?
Maybe. I have been indulging in, you know, true Broken Lizard fashion for the last, you know, few days. And I'm sure there's probably a few brain cells that have been lost in that shuffle.
Yeah, you gotta pregame for Dragon science. Con. You gotta get your liver right for all the drinking you do at Dragon Con.
So, I mean, I've been practicing my yin, man. You know, the yin and the yang.
Drink enough yin, yeah, you might pull out your yang.
Put that away.
So what are you going to rate this one?
I mean, for the style and everything, you know, a 4, you know, maybe 4.5. You know, just personally not what I want to just sit around if I've got a choice and drink day in and day out. But you know what? If I'm looking for a pale ale and, you know, a fine damn quality one, then, you know, I'm going to reach for this.
Yeah, if you're a pale ale drinker, this is not a bad pale ale. You know, give it a try. Tell us what you think. And with that, we'll be right back.
Yes, science!
And welcome back. It's time for some science. You know, time to get your education on. And that's one thing, you know, as we're preparing to head to Dragon Con, there's a lot of cool scientists there and doing some science panels and whatnot. I mean, we talked to Stephen Grenade last year doing panels on, you know, the science of video games and movies. So, you know, take a break from your pop culture nerd pursuits and check out some science, and you actually learn something while you're there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, man, is, you know, I've you know, set in some of the panels with some of the scientists and stuff like that. And I mean, you know, oftentimes it's great because there's not super long lines or anything. And then it's just a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, it's just awesome, you know.
So speaking of science and whatnot, yeah, we always have to include some robot news. And this week we have a poker playing robot who is kicking professionals' asses.
You know, I have a problem with this, though, is, you know, I just like, you know, a lot of the, you know, a few years back it broke that, you know, the, you know, electronic poker games, you know, could be hacked or rigged. I mean, obviously anything that is electronic is subject to said things. So, you know, if it's an AI, then, you know, how does it not pre-program itself to, you know...
Well, that's the thing. It's what they call this poker bot, Libratus, made by researchers at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and basically they had made a previous version of this that, you know, lost to the pros, but this is the first version, kind of like you've heard of computers besting chess masters, and the latest one was the Japanese game
Go. Or the English language.
Yeah, but. Poker is kind of like the last frontier in AI program because, you know, it requires reasoning and intelligence. You know, with stuff like chess and Go, there's kind of preformed rules, and as long as you can kind of, you know the mechanics of the game, you can, you know, eventually figure out, like, there's only like a limited amount of strategy. But with poker, as anyone who's played it know, sometimes the, you know, best hand doesn't win because of stuff like bluffing and reading your opponent and stuff that's normally a little bit confusing for computers, because they, you know, aren't able to play these games of imperfect information where, you know, there's not facts and figures to base your decision making on. But this newest version of Liber is actually, they played for 20 days against several pros and heads up Texas Hold'em. So that's one-on-one, a professional versus the computer. And they, over this course of this action, they played like 120,000 hands of poker, where, you know, the, you know, overall, you know, the AI kicked everyone's ass. So it's, this is like a huge step in the evolution of, you know, artificial intelligence and how it's, you know, predicting human behavior and whatnot.
So now it's cards. Next, it's war.
Exactly. I mean, you want Skynet, this is how you get Skynet. You teach it to outthink humans, which could be bad.
Maybe it just relies on pot odds.
That's the thing, you know, the human players are definitely at a disadvantage because you can't tell if the computer's bluffing. There's nothing for you to read.
And I mean, and you know, speaking of poker, I mean, both you and I mean, we spent many, many years behind, you know, poker tables. And I mean, that was the thing for me. Like, I, for one, despise online poker. I hated it, you know, because it took that dynamic out. I mean, for me, playing poker is,
yeah, you more had, you know, to base
almost
things
like a philosophical battle, right? You know, yeah, because you're looking for the tells. You're looking, you know.
Yeah, on online that, poker, you have to pay so much more attention to people's betting patterns and stuff, because you can't really look at their face and judge what they're doing. And then there's also this experiment used heads up, no mullet hold'em. I'd like to see how this computer, like, you know, performs in an actual, like, tournament setting where you're playing against 10 other players and not just, you know, the one-on-one heads up, which one-on-one heads up versus playing a table of players.
Oh, yeah, one-on-one plays vastly much, different. You know, much more differently than, you know, when you're at a, you know, table of 6, 8, 10. Golly, 10 people at a table is a lot, though. Holy crap.
Yeah, so that may be the next level of this experiment. Yeah. You know, throw him in the World Series of Poker and see how he does against, like, you know, more than one guy at a time. But yeah, it's you know, very interesting, because, like I said, it's not like these other games that have, like, specific rules and scenarios. You know, like I said, you can have the worst hand and still win if you're able to, you know, bluff and read your other opponent.
That 10-deuce offsuit, man.
So yeah, have, you know, a computer being able to figure that stuff out is kind of scary.
Well, I mean, and I think you're at a disadvantage anyway, because a human opponent, you can kind of get under their skin a little bit, you know, especially if they're starting to go on tilt and they start, you know, making a couple of mistakes. You can probably bet them off of some decent hands, where, you know, the computer AI, I don't see it, you know, having that emotion and you know, giving in. So, I mean, you're at a huge advantage from that standpoint. Like, yeah. Our disadvantage.
And other, you know, artificial things. No, how many times have you dropped your phone and shattered your screen?
So, here's the deal. I got smart, and let me take that back. I thought I was getting smart. I bought in this whole marketing idea that this, you know, tempered glass was the next best thing over the, you know, film screen protectors, but I, you know, at $20 a pop for the tempered glass, and
yeah, I meant not to break my screen, but I broke that glass a couple times.
Oh, that shit's just designed to keep you forking over $20. Like, yeah, you know, I've bought the, you know, like, military grade, you know, film, you know, that you put over.
Yeah, I've never broken one of those, but yeah, I've broke the shit out of some of those little glass inserts. But now, and you know, a recent study, people who have cracked phones in a dating environment get less second dates. Like, apparently people judge you if your phone looks shitty.
Well, I mean, there's actually been studies done, like, as far as, like people looking to get home loans and finances and stuff. And if you don't have an Apple and you have an Android device, you're automatically looked down on and stuff like that. Like people have done studies that show, oh, people that carry around, you know, whatever product, you know, typically is at a higher income than somebody carrying around its Android counterpart. Like,
well, if you're tired of breaking your phone, Motorola just filed for a patent on what they're calling a self-healing phone screen. It's going to utilize something called shape memory polymers, which have fiber optics embedded into the glass that can sense damage and redirect heat to the damaged area. This shape memory polymers, when heated up to a certain temperature, will reform to its original shape intended. So, you know, the phone will detect damage and then heal itself with, you know, up to, I think, 90% of its original strength once it's healed.
Or they just bring back the old school Nokia and that thing would just shatter whatever it hits, you know? I mean, you don't have to worry about the phone breaking. It's, you know, oh shit, you know, that was a chunk of concrete that phone just took out. It's like got the Hulkbuster armor of cell phones.
Exactly. You know, there's no, you know, time frame now on when this might be actually available, but it'd be kind of cool. You know, you break your phone and you leave it overnight, and then next day you wake up and your phone's back to normal. Yeah, it's probably more expensive, but yeah, it beats replacing your screen consistently, especially if you're somebody that you know, is hard on your phone out in the environment. I don't know how many times when I was like on the road, I'd get out of my car and drop my freaking phone on the concrete because it'd fall off my belt or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I just recently started getting more and more into cell phone repair, and it's kind of funny, you know. The part cost, you know, most of the time is relatively cheap, you know, for a phone. It's the, oh yeah, you know, I've got
to... Hiring someone that knows how to install it is the expensive part. Like you know, any kind of repair, you always pay more for the labor than you do the actual part cost.
No, that $10 part is probably going to cost you, you know, $100 if I've got to put it on.
And in NASA news, you know, what is it, last year, year before last, the, you know, long-lived space shuttle program was discontinued, and, you know, there's been a emphasis on the civilian private market doing space. Well, NASA has unveiled its new shuttle called the Dream Chaser space plane. And to throw it back to our Beer 30, developed by Sierra Nevada Corp.
Irony, that was not planned ahead of time.
Yeah, it looks pretty badass looking, but it's a quarter of the size of the original space shuttle. It's only about 30 feet long. But it's going to come in two versions. One, a manned spacecraft that can hold up to 7 crew members, and an unmanned spacecraft for transporting cargo and stuff to the International Space Station. And, you know, this thing will carry, you know, 12,120 pounds of cargo, which, you know, far exceeds, like, the NASA's current cargo requirements. And is, you know, it's finished, like, its first couple waves of test flight, and, you know, they're hoping it to, you know, start making deliveries to the space station by sometime next year.
So, you know, it looks like here that it's going to, you know, carry passengers or cargo.
So, yep. There's, I mean, two versions.
Yep.
And that's cool that they've kind of gone unmanned with it too, as far as the, you know, cargo shuttle. So you don't have to tie up a pilot and, you know, transporting cargo. You don't need a pilot unless you're going to be transporting people. But also it's, you know, can I think like the service life on this thing, because there's like NASA's new kind of guidelines is they want to be, you know, travel frequently, safely, land on almost any runway, and operate more economically. So not only does this craft say, you know, it can be used like 15 times before it needs to be replaced, 90% of the parts are reusable and recyclable. So it's going to be a lot cheaper to fly and, you know, be able to fly more often than our original space shuttles programs. But this thing will launch, you know, on a rocket like a traditional, you know, space shuttle, but then can pretty much land anywhere on its return voyage. And with stuff like, you know, SpaceX experimenting with their reusable rockets, you know, space flight's getting cheaper, which, you know, helps lead to more exploration and, you know, also eventual civilian spaceflight, some space tourism.
That'd be kind of cool. You're like, hey, I'm just going to hop on a space shuttle for a few weeks.
Yeah.
A couple months, whatever the case is.
Hey, man, everyone's skinny in space. I want to be weightless. And while you're up there, a new thing, you know, one of the problems with...
I think, talking about the weightlessness, a cool video that I saw was, you know, a NASA scientist pouring water in space. And how, like, it just runs over the hand and stuff like that. Like, it doesn't... Like, it's just so awesome.
Yeah, it's like a weird gel. Blob. Yeah. And another thing, you know, one of the problems of, you know, because everyone's thought about eventually we're going to have some kind of colonization of Mars. But one of the big problems is air. How do we get it there? And, you know, it's do we transport it or whatnot? Well, we've talked about the Mars 2020 rover. They have added an experiment to it that they're going to try to create oxygen on Mars. Basically, the Martian, like with our atmosphere being, mostly nitrogen with, you know, high levels of, you know, like 20-30% oxygen. Well, the Martian atmosphere is like 95% carbon dioxide with only 2 or 3% oxygen. But, you know, anyone who has studied plants and photosynthesis knows that, you know, plants take carbon dioxide and create oxygen. So, and they're going to do a small kind of experiment to see if they can produce oxygen from the carbon dioxide that's in the atmosphere. The experiment will be called MOXIE, Mars Oxygen in Situ Resource Utilization Experiment. And basically what they're doing is using a fuel cell to split the carbon atoms from the, you know, CO2 is made by carbon and two oxygens. And if you split that, you get carbon and breathable O2. So, like, if this experiment is successful, they're planning to, you know, on the next mission, you know, take something that's a, you know, 100 times larger that can produce oxygen for an eventual, you know, Mars visitation. Because oxygen, you know, in its gaseous form is something that we can breathe, but in its liquid form is one of the main components of jet fuel, or, you know, whatever, rocket fuel. So, you know, they could actually build some kind of refueling station on Mars for deeper space flight or, you know, return space flight. Because if you had to carry a bunch of heavy shit to Mars, probably going to use up most of your, that's one of the things is having enough fuel to make the return trip. So if they don't have to carry as much.
We're not just going to build a big escalator?
Yeah. So if they don't have to carry as much fuel, that means they can carry more cargo and then just refill fuel there and head on back home. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting experiment and shows where they're kind of thinking about the future of space flight and, you know, moving on past our own solar system and getting into space shenanigans. I mean, we already know they've, you know, are signing up for the Space Marine. So we got like a new space shuttle and we're looking for some refueling stations on Mars, man. Probably looking for aliens.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's probably aliens. But now they're going to have oxygen.
Yep.
Either that or they're going to spontaneously combust.
One or the other. No smoking near the oxygen tanks.
Yes.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Hello, podcast fans. My name is Chris Jones, and I'm here to tell you about the Nerd Bliss podcast. Now, of all the geek-oriented podcasts out there, we are definitely one of them. Yes, we talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and cosplay and Marvel and DC and the usual. But as geeks, we embrace anyone with very specialized knowledge, like triathletes or improv comedians or musicians. So we try to bring them in and let them share their geekiness with you to help broaden some horizons. And maybe you'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something. You can find our entire catalog at nerdblisspodcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Player FM, and we are now proud to be a part of the ESO Network. Once again, we are the Nerd Bliss Podcast. Thank you, and pod bless.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. So, you know, we're going to go ahead and open this on a little bit of a somber note, but, you know, a director that, you know, has really been a big influence and whose movies I've always really enjoyed, has passed over the course of the weekend. So, you know, we lost the iconic, Tobe Hooper, probably most notable for the Texas Chainsaw films, but, you know, also went on to do Poltergeist, and then did a film as recently as 2010. But, you know, I've always, you know, loved his work, his directing style, and, you know, he did a, you know, lot that, you know, so many, you know, directors are, you know, piggybacking off of as far as the horror genre is concerned and everything else. So, you know, definitely wanted to, you know, pay homage and tribute, you know, to Tobe Hooper.
The Saw is family.
The Saw is absolutely family, you know, and that, I mean, you know, that's iconic. I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, so many of the films, you know, were, you know, different as far as the sets and everything else based on, you know, actual, you know, things that, you know, certain, you know, serial killers had did over the years and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, that's really, you know, I think the foundation for, you know, what we saw, you know, a lot with, you know, Rob Zombie's films and everything else. So,
yeah. And everything he did was like, not like it, you know, he was consistently different with all this, even with, you know, the Texas Chainsaw movies that he did, like each one, you know, was a little bit different than the last. You know, even like I said, the change from whatever Texas Chainsaw 1 to Texas Chainsaw 2, it's such a different style of movie that he was, you know, not, you know, didn't like, you know, sit around with in, you know, with like the same ideas over and over again. He was constantly reinventing what he was doing. That's, you know, that's kind of a, you know, a trademark of a great director.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, the horror films that he did and stuff like that, you know, were vastly different. And you know, a lot of the times too, it was the, you know, the psychological aspect of things, you know. I mean, if you think about Texas Chainsaw, you know, by and large, I mean, the premise was, you know, horrible, but you know, there wasn't a ton of, you know, blood and gore, you know, it wasn't a gore fest. It was, you know, so much more psychological and stuff. So, you know, anyway, you know, just wanted to pay a little bit of an homage and, tribute to Tobe there. You know, switching gears, you know, we've got Marvel, series on Netflix. The Defenders is now live. I've already checked out a few episodes. So far, I'm digging it. You know, I read an article earlier today that was kind of interesting about, you know, how people weren't necessarily watching, you know, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, Daredevil, and Luke Cage, and, you know, like, story chronological order. They were basically watching the series as they found out about particular characters. And
yeah, and someone asked me today that was like, you know, do I have to watch all the previous stuff to enjoy The Defenders? I'm only two episodes into The Defenders yet, so I'm not, but from the looks of it, I would say as long as you're kind of caught up on Daredevil and maybe Iron Fist, you're probably good. I don't know if you have to watch in the entirety of the Marvel Netflix universe to get it, but yeah, it looks like the storyline and the bad guys are very heavy, you know, Daredevil and Iron Fist.
I mean, it's Hell's Kitchen. It's not a very big area. I mean, you know, you and I were having
a lot of hand stuff, which is, you know, Marvel's version of the Foot Clan, I guess, but
you know, but I mean, I will say that, you know, just in the first, you know, few episodes, I would say that it's probably beneficial, you know, especially like when you see Jessica Jones, you know, freaking rip the car, you know, off the, you know, tow truck, you know, or whatever, and being like, whoa, who the hell was that girl? You know, or the subtle nuances, you know, of, you know, freaking, you know, the avocados just making, you know, small little cameos, you know, here and there, and knowing, you know, a little bit of premise on, you know, their backstory and stuff. I mean, I
avocado.
The avocado's at law, man.
No, I don't remember that.
I guess you don't. You yeah. suck.
Do they make good guacamole?
Probably not. Yeah, okay. But if you need good defense, they're probably the people to call. In a courtroom, hands down.
Okay.
And the guy's pretty good with the bow staff.
Mm.
So if you ever need a recruit. You know, a little bit more Marvel Netflix news is we got, you know, I'm not going to say a full-length trailer. I mean, it's, you know, a minute and 15 seconds of pure awesomeness. But, you know, we've got a little bit more, you know, look at the Punisher series.
Oh,
and,
wait.
You know, Jon Bernthal is just... You know, I was watching, you know, him do, you know, talk about the series a little bit, you know, and what limited capacity he was allowed to talk. But, you know, he was talking about how, you know, so many actors come into a role and they're good actors. And, you know, it just kind of comes naturally. And he's like, you know, for me, like, I'm really having to put my, you know, heart and my soul into this thing and, you know, really, really work at it. And, you know, from what I'm seeing, you know, in the trailers and stuff, I mean, just looks absolutely awesome.
Yeah, what little, like, you know, action sequences are in that trailer, it very, especially, it looks like he's doing some gun-fu. You know, we're big fans of John Wick. And especially when it starts off, you see, like, somebody hammering concrete with a sledgehammer. I'm like, is he digging up his guns, John
Wick
style?
There's my weapon cache.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, very kind of reminiscent of, you know, John Wick. And I'm like, I, if it's anything like those movies, I'm down, I'm sold. Because, I mean, they like I think I said before that they should have just called Daredevil Season 2 Punisher Season 1. Because the movie was so much more his series than it was Daredevil's.
Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, just looking forward to that. You know, up next is, you know, more Marvel news. You know, our Disney.
That was the thing
rather,
I saw
like,
a thing someone posted. Because if you remember Doctor Strange, at the first, you know, first thing of Doctor Strange was like he was trying to save someone that had got shot in the head. People were like, the patient he was working on should have been Frank Castle. That would have made it so much cooler.
That would have been awesome. So, in Star Wars news, so every character ever is getting their own movie now.
Pretty much.
So, you know, we've known about the, you know, Han Solo movie. Apparently now there is a Jabba the Hutt, you know, movie in the works. So, you know, I knew you would be excited about that since...
More cosplay opportunities.
You know, you are the steampunk Jabba the Hutt, you know...
I mean, that could be doing it, like, because... It seems like the Solo films, they're kind of got their own style. You know, Jabba the Hutt being a, like, Godfather-esque, like, you know, mafia movie set in the Star Wars universe would be interesting.
Well, I mean, I think Jabba the Hutt, you know, could really work. I mean, you know, that's the, you know, seedy, dark side of the Star Wars universe that, you know, you... don't really get a whole lot of glimpse in. So, I mean, you know, the whole smuggling business aspect of things, I mean, I think opens the doors to, you know, just some of the, you know,
and yeah, since we're
grittier
kind
of sides
a,
of Star Wars.
A Han Solo origin movie, I don't know, because, you know, now that the Disney has nuked the beloved expanded universe, a lot of Solo's origin is tied in with working for Jabba the Hutt and eventually getting, you know, that bounty placed on his head. So, I mean, that's kind of a way to, you know, lead into the Jabba the movie is having him show up in the Han Solo film.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, there's definitely some opportunities, you know, for some crossover and, you know, to be like, well, maybe we didn't get that full feature length, but, you know, we can definitely get, you know, several, you know, good solid minutes of.
Yeah, how do you say, I'm going to give you an offer you can't refuse in Huttese?
I need my Huttese translator, but I'm sure, you know, and I'm sure one exists.
Probably. Yeah, and they've also announced, you know, I think Obi-Wan's getting a movie. That's,
yep.
That's going to be one of the, I think, the next up in rotation. I just hope they bring Ewan McGregor back because, you know, he's. kind of aged since the prequels a little bit, where he's starting to look more like, you know, he could definitely be an older, you know, with CGI and make, you know, more of an older Obi-Wan Kenobi. But then again, there was roughly 18 years of him sitting around waiting for Luke to get old enough to train that, you know, I'm pretty sure he didn't just sit in the desert and chill the whole time. He must have had some kind of adventures. It'd be kind of cool seeing some of that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a director on board now. You know, there's still no title or anything yet, but, you know, I mean...
Or even if they go way, way back to, like, younger, you know, Obi-Wan when he's, like, an apprentice, or even more of, like, you know, his adventures as a Jedi Knight during the, you know, Clone Wars era and prequels era. I mean, there's, you know, a vast history of Obi-Wan that they could explore and delve into.
Absolutely. So... You know, I mean, there's absolutely some, you know, opportunities there. So, you know, as we know more, keep folks apprised. And, you know, it's just good to see, you know, all the stuff in the works. You know, I would like, you know, to see some of the, you know, lesser known, you know, characters, you know, receiving, you know, some additional love and stuff. I mean, I think that's one of the things I really enjoyed about Rogue One.
About the Gonk droid. I want to know his origin story.
We're going to have to do a fan film.
Where's our Jawas movie?
You know, you say that, and, you know, next we're going to end up with freaking Jar Jar Binks, the beginning.
The Jar Jar origin story. Oh, my God. No. Kill it. Kill it with fire.
That'd make so many people happy. switching gears into a completely different universe and DC news. Suicide Squad 2 apparently is now being fast-tracked because we have learned that there is now a Joker origin movie in the works, as well as a Joker and Harley Quinn, you know, movie also. So, you know, in order to get Suicide Squad 2 out before the origin stories... Everything is a mad scramble.
Yeah, that's not going to end badly.
Like, you know, so I, you know, things are crazy over at, you know, Warner Brothers right now. So,
I mean, they've so far they've done good with Wonder Woman. That's like the thing that's kind of pulling stuff out of the crapper. But we'll see how Justice League turns out.
Yeah, I'm not going to crap all over it just yet. I mean, I'm
totally
going to
crap all over
it. Yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to, you know, see here. So, I don't know. You know, Jared Leto has come out and said, hey, I'm fully committed to doing something with, you know, being the Joker long term. But, you know,
I just want that rumor about the freaking Batman Beyond movie to be true. That's the thing I'm waiting on.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, they're talking about for the origin, you know, films, you know, that Jared Leto, you know, will, you know, reprise, you know, his role, and, you know, but the, you know, Harley Quinn could launch under a new, different actor, possibly younger. So I don't know, you know, I mean, there's some changes potentially afoot. Who knows?
Yeah,
you
heard that new animated movie, the whatever Batman and Harley Quinn movie, is supposed to be pretty good. I've not had a chance to pick it up yet. But yeah, she was probably the best part of Suicide Squad. I mean, it's potentially an interesting character to do, and there's been, at least in the Batman animated series, like rare opportunities where she's actually been a good guy in her own twisted way. So, I mean, that's a direction that they could.
I don't know. Like, I'd almost like to see Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy. Like, yes. You know, I mean,
that would be an interesting movie.
And then, you know, to tie nerd news and the entire segment is, you know, what we hinted at, you know, toward the beginning of the episode is we did get our look at Super Troopers 420.
Yes, we got a release date. They're coming out on 420, yo. Yes. 2018. So we don't have that much longer to wait, and it looks like the boys are back. You know, from the trailer, it looks very reminiscent of the original with shenanigans and whatnot. And even Rabbit getting abused. He's like, I'm not the rookie anymore, guys. You like, you know,
we could stop with it.
Yes.
I don't think it will, though.
No, probably not. And far as I know, like, the entire, like, original cast, but it looked like they've even brought back, like, some of the random people that got pulled over are back. I've read she wasn't in the trailer, but yeah, according to, you know, what I've seen on it, that Ursula is back, and yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Apparently, this time they're going with the Canadians or something. Those damn Canadians.
Why not? Maybe they'll even bump into our friends Terrence and Philip.
Yeah, from the supposed synopsis is there's a border dispute between the U.S. and Canada, so their trooper post is reactivated to patrol this disputed territory. And hijinks ensue with instead of competing with the local PD, now they're having to mess with the Mounties.
Damn it, we got the wall, and Mexico paid for it, but it's on the wrong border.
I think even Foster finally grew a mustache. Rabbit still hasn't earned his mustache.
It's not, you know, not matured to that level of seniority yet.
No, you got to rank up before you get your mustache. That's sweet. A true sign of authority.
Any other news or anything you got that...
I think that is it. Let's just talk about, you know, like I said, this episode will go up right before Dragon Con. So if you're listening to this and coming to Dragon Con, there is the Dragon Con Cigar Group meetup at the Red Phone Booth on Thursday starting at 7:30. There's also an ESO Network meet and greet at, I believe, starting at 10 o'clock at the 22 Stories Bar in the Hyatt. And, you know, we'll be various places throughout the weekend. So follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Cigar Nerd Pod. You know, shoot us a message if you want to link up, smoke a cigar, have a beer, whatever, if you're in the area. Also, check us out on ESOpodcast.com and our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. If you want some sweet Cigar Nerd shirts or any other kind of smoking shirts, check out RealMenSmokeCigars.com. And in fact, I will probably have a couple brochures with discount codes on me at Dragon Con if you can find me and want to grab one of those. And of course, StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds. And with that, meow. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.